Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. It's been a while. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw, recorded in my echoey kitchen in North Wales. I am Jim. I am your host. We are on the Distraction Pieces Network. It's dead good. Check out all the other podcasts on said network, for I love all of them dearly. Some plugs before we talk to my wonderful guest, because he's doing a list today. Like, normally I do the list, but today I've got the guest do the list because he's much more of an expert. Some plugs. I've got a book coming out. If you go on my Twitter, at Jim Smallman, there's a link at the top. My pinned tweet is a link so you can buy that book on Amazon. If you don't want to buy it from Amazon, then you can also buy it from Waterstones and various other book-selling websites. Just search for my name and the book. The book, I'm Sorry I Love You, A History of Professional Wrestling, will come up. I'm going to do this a lot over the course of the next few weeks before it's released on August the 23rd. But basically, if I sell another couple of hundred books, I'll get in the Sunday Times top 10 bestsellers. And the fact that I could potentially make a positive book about professional wrestling, be a best-selling book, and then, even more hilariously, my Twitter bio could read best-selling author, would be both wonderful for the wonderful wrestling industry, but also two fingers up to all my English teachers who told me I was dreadful at school. So do check that out, at Jim Smallman, pinned tweet at the top, or my website, jimsmallman.com, there's a link book, and you can go on there. If you're in America, you can't buy it through Amazon at the minute, because there's things called publishing rights, so there's going to be an American version of the book at some point, and they're negotiating those rights at the minute, which means Amazon won't sell the British version of it, which means some people had their orders cancelled this week. Again, look through my Twitter timeline. I have told you lovely American people where you can actually buy my book from. There's a website called The Book Depository that will ship it to you for free from the United Kingdom should you want to buy it. So it's out on August 23rd. Please buy it. Thanks very much. Also, progresswrestling.com. We do wrestling shows. There's none on sale at the minute apart from Wembley that haven't sold out. Or there's Wembley in America. So Wembley, September the 30th. Come to that. It'll be great. My guest will be at that. And come to America, six shows in America, ECW Arena in Philadelphia, then Boston, then New York, then Seattle with our friends from Defy, then Chicago, then Detroit, then Everyone Die of Exhaustion. And my guest will also be on all six of those shows as well. So good times. He's going to be sick of me, sick to death of me. But he has just said we need to go and watch an MLS game, which makes me like him a little bit more. My guest today to discuss obscure masked wrestlers. He's an obscure mask, but he's not. He's a very well-known mask wrestler. It's Kid Lykos.
Somewhat. Depends.
No. Mate, I've seen the reaction for you. I saw the reaction for you in Sheffield when you returned.
And
you
Sheffield.
In Sheffield. When you brain-busted the living daylights out of Flash Morgan Webster. And I saw the reaction on Sunday in Camden when everyone was chanting welcome back and stuff like that. Bearing in mind, they've seen you in that time.
Yeah.
Because you've accompanied Chris to the ring.
Yeah. True.
So, you know, you're a popular boy. We should probably talk about the injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the thing that I'm now going to use you as a shining example. I use you. I use Flash Morgan Webster as well as a great example of actually rehabbing an injury properly.
Fingers crossed there.
Yeah, but because obviously when you got hurt... against Gibson and Drake.
Yes.
Like, that sucks. And was massively unexpected and made me very sad. Because, you know, I don't like anyone getting hurt on our shows. Least of all, someone who's a mate. I don't like that.
Yeah.
And so, for the listeners who went away, what did you do? What was your injury?
So,
In August 2017, I wrestled in Ireland for OTT. And I came down, like, with me and Chris do the Codebreaker Senton, the sick effing tag move as one of our finishes. And I came down funny on that, and my shoulder popped out. Covered the guy, he kicked out, and it popped back in, and that was it. The next thing I did was, like, the Spanish fly and stuff, so I was like, ah, oh, screaming in pain. Like, at the end, I, like, dive, and I hit Travis, and I'm just screaming at Travis that I'm hurt. Whatever. EMTs check me over, say, it's okay, it's back in, just rest it up. I then carried on my schedule. I take like a week off, say, because there was a pro race show where I was wrestling Tyler.
Yes,
maybe
there was.
A week and a half, 2 weeks later.
Yes, I remember.
And I wrestled then.
Because I remember messaging you and asking, as I do with a lot of people, going, are you all right? And you were like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, they said I was okay. So I just kept on keeping on. And then I was wrestling throughout the next maybe month and a half. And then whilst trying to overcompensate for my shoulder, I broke my wrist, which was sad, but whatever, that's healed up. I then came back and I wrestled Walter and Tim at Progress. Fine, no problems. Wrist, if anything, was more so an injury. I did a show for Attack on a Wednesday, and it just popped out again as I hit the ropes. Didn't want to tell anyone because obviously that was a... like I didn't want to come back from my wrist break and go, oh, by the way, my shoulder's still messed up. So I didn't tell anyone. I just carried on. It popped back into place anyway. Carried on with my life. Managed to make it to Ali Pali. All that stuff. Great.
And a fantastic match as well that if people haven't seen, go to demand-progress.com and watch that because it's wonderful.
Underrated ladder match, I would say.
It's a great ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
I can conclusively say it's the best ladder match in Progress history, but equally we did have a match with the worst ladders in the world in. So
I have seen. But, and then keeping that secret, whatever, keep wrestling. Not long after wrestling Gibbo and Drake, and everyone thinks it's when they threw me into the chairs. I was fine, no problems. But my shoulder was just weak because I had a tear in it that was progressively getting worse.
Yeah.
And I did a flip dive off of a higher angled raised area, which my shoulder pops out.
It's the where the wheelchairs go, isn't it? In the ballroom, yeah.
And it just pops out and doesn't go back in. And I try and put, like, even if you watch on demand, I'm trying to pull it back in, doesn't work. I go over, call the EMTs over, it doesn't work. So I have to go to the hospital and get it put back into place. I get an MRI maybe a month later. And they find an 11 millimeter tear, which is just enough for it to be super unstable, which is crazy to think how small that is, but
it's like, yeah, it's just over a centimeter, isn't
it? Yeah, but that's enough for it to just be completely unstable, to the point where, like, when they put me under for my surgery, which was the 20th of December 2017, if I put my arm above my head and they push my shoulder, it comes out.
Whoa.
That's how unstable it is with just that little tear, which is crazy that it didn't happen in wrestling, because that position is quite regular.
I mean, my wife's got hypermobility syndrome, so her joints pop out a lot, and I know that from watching football for years. I know that it sounds daft because people always think like knee injuries are the worst that footballers can get. Dislocated shoulders and stuff are the worst because you have to have surgery to hold it in, because once it's out once, it happens again and again and again.
Like, Flash tried to tell me, like, once it's out, it's torn.
Yeah.
And I was like, they said it was fine, whatever. But then, obviously, it is true. And, like, I see a lot of people with shoulder injuries now. People ask me about shoulder injuries. And it sounds like it's torn. You're like, it's heartbreaking to, like, tell someone else, like, oh, no, that sounds like my thing when I was working through it. And that's not a good idea.
No. No. Because obviously... We have a... It's weird for me and you because I live near you.
Yes.
So we've car shared a bit from back and forth from shows and stuff, which I enjoy because I often drive on my own, so it's nice to have companies. Nearly always either you or Matt Richards. And so you live a few miles that way. Drew Parker lives a few miles that way.
Yeah.
And I bumped into a lad who was involved in your training in the Asda down here. So, which is a bizarre thing to happen. So we have that, but also you attend the university I went to.
Yes.
which is also like, this is weird. So I'd try and, while you're out, I'd try and sort of shoot you a message every now and again.
Yeah,
just go, everything all right? You know, just because we don't want to, And this is important, and this is not me trying to cover my own back or anything like that, but you'll testify like us that I'd never ask anyone to work when they were hurt and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah,
and, but what I like about both you and Flash's period of convalescence has been, like, initially I think we thought you were coming back a little bit earlier, and then we found out it was pushed back a bit, and we were like, in our heads, yeah, we have to change some bookings, but at the same time we go, okay, I want him to be better. And that's what we wanted, is we wanted you to be absolutely 100%. And I don't think people realise the amount of rehab that you have to put into doing something like this. It's not just they stitch you back up and you're fine, is it? You have to do a, you have to put a lot in.
It's hard, man. Like, credit to Gav, credit to Flash, I should say, for helping me out. Because, like, he has the experience in it. So certain things where I'd be like, if I'd ever worry about something, he's been through it. So like, one thing he made sure to tell me when I was in the sling and I couldn't move my shoulder at the time, he's like, when you come back and you're allowed to do, like, weight training or anything physical with your resistance bands to rehab the shoulder, you're going to feel pops or, like, crunches. It's normal. It's just air escaping because it hasn't, and, like, the tendons stretching for the first time in months. Like, even now, when I get checked over by my physio, one of the issues I have when they test my range of motion is pain in the tricep and, like, elbow area. And it's because the tricep shortens, like, for some reason, very drastically during that period of time. Because of just, you have 2 months of just having your arm at a right angle against your body. So it shortens drastically. So even now, like, even though the strength's coming back, you don't have that length for all the muscles or the tendons and all those things. And I've had scares throughout it. Like, I had a point where I thought I popped it out again, but it was just, I'd done too much bicep work because I was, like, trying to rush the gym unnecessarily. And the tendon that links between your bicep and your shoulder can tense up and then ping.
Yeah.
And it feels like a dislocation, but it's nothing to worry about. It's just you've overworked it.
That's the thing, I think, the fear when someone's had a bad injury.
Mm.
So I was at Download when Nixon Newell hurt her knee again, and she only tweaked it a little bit, and I think she's going to be fine. Like, she meant to wrestle at Progress the next day, came to Progress with the Dakota Kai anyway, and was walking on it okay. She was limping a little bit, but it wasn't, but the, you could see as soon as it happened, you could see that, not just from her, but everyone around her, all the other wrestlers around her were like, oh no. I'm not surprised. Like, I've never had a really severe injury where I've had to worry about it happening again.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and that's the thing, that there's plenty of people who would have been in your situation and not had the surgery and just tried to just carry on and just get worse and worse and worse and worse, and and now you're back.
Yes,
and now you get to do cool stuff again, like you did at the weekend, which was good.
I tried.
You did do cool stuff.
Wasn't used to the ropes anymore. They're higher than I remember.
Well, because we got a new ring, mate.
Yeah,
because you came back through the curtain and went, "Ooh, it's a higher ring, isn't it?"
Yeah,
that's why I broke my toe during Super Strong Style weekend, because it's just that extra few inches of getting out of the ring, and just the way I slide out the ring anyway, I put my foot down, but just spiked the top of my toe and broke my toe, and. There are people haven't wrestled, like Will Ospreay said the same thing, because he's not wrestled in that ring yet.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a great ring, but it's just,
it's tall.
It's a big ring, isn't it? I'm like, yes, it is. And every time, I was glad I was wearing shorts the other day, because every time I try and get into that ring, just hopping up onto the apron in skinny jeans is the worst idea in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's just ripping real bad.
Yeah, I mean, my knees are bad anyway, but yeah, I don't need that extra hassle. So, before we get into the list, this is something that me and my wife were talking to you about before. Now, shock horror, I know what Kid Lykos really looks like.
Yes.
Because he sat opposite me not wearing a mask. Now, I've always had a fascination with masked wrestlers, and I think it's because, like, when I was a kid, and bear in mind I'm 40, so when I was a kid, like, I'd buy, like, wrestling magazines, and they'd have black and white pictures of wrestling from the 70s in, and there'd be guys like The Destroyer and people like that in, and it always feels, and Mil Máscaras and El Santo and people like that, and it always felt that masked wrestlers are always a sort of ubiquitous part of wrestling. And then the older I got, like, I remember being, obviously passed away recently, but I remember being fascinated by Vader in his initial proper full black mask attire, and I've always been fascinated by masked wrestlers. There's always that weird thing of like, certainly when Mexican guys have worked for us, there's that weird thing of I just expect them to come in their mask and they don't. And
yeah.
There's that. So, was it always with you when you, and again, I always say when you were younger, but you're young now. Mm. But did you always think, when I wrestle, I want to wear a mask, or was it?
Oh, no. Oh, God, no.
Because you have, and don't go and look on purpose, but you have wrestled without the
mask. Yes, of course.
So, which most people will be aware of, and I'm certainly aware of. Mm. But was that, what was the first of all, what was the reasoning, I suppose, to become like us? And also, what, did you have that fascination with mask wrestlers?
Oh, I loved mask wrestling, like, especially Lucha Libre. Mm. I was a huge fan, because obviously, when I grew up, Mysterio was top dog, so it was great. Like, he was one of my favourites. He used to have, like, the life-size cardboard cutout thing, and I'd be like, I'm taller than him now, so it's alright. Obviously, then I found, like, Mexican wrestling. I used to get DVDs from IVP videos and stuff like that, of just, like, Lucha Libre shows, and I'd make these dumb videos of, like, best dives and stuff. Like, there's still one of them on my Facebook somewhere, which is hilarious, and I was just obsessed with that style of wrestling because I was a small guy, and for a not very coordinated person, I could flip very coordinated. So,
but also, I think you're right about the size thing, because I mean, you're not, compared to Brooks, you're
especially, you know.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'10", though Matt Fitchett will argue that down. I won't have.
I reckon, yeah, because I'm 5'10".
So yeah, I had to get measured when I went to uni, like, so I know my height. But brother was like, no, you're not 5'10".
But, like, I mean, you are in a tag team with someone who's 6'7".
Yeah,
so,
which,
you know.
Yeah, it has its effect.
But yeah, people do often see the size side of things, don't they? Because I know that, like, when Ray Horace wrestled Brooks for us in New Orleans, he's maybe 5'8". But in the grand scheme of things now, it's not that important. But when you're a kid and you're watching wrestling, and you presume that you have to be 6 foot.
Yeah,
six.
Exactly. Like, I thought I'd have to be tall, and, like, I was maybe, what, 5'7" at that point. And I was like, oh, I'm taller than this cutout of Mysterio. I'm not, like, jacked up, but, you know, that comes with time. So I'll just do my stuff and hope for the best. And it's worked out well. Like, I'm at a size where I can high fly pretty good. I wish I was bigger, both height and weight wise, but I'm coming back from a surgery, so I'm not too worried about the weight thing. It's going to come.
And I know how much you hit the gym and stuff like that, but it's just, you know, how old are you now?
I'm 21.
Yeah. So at 21, there's that weird thing of, if you go back and look at videos of a lot of the guys that we love now when they were 20, 21, and the difference in their bodies from 2021 to even like 25, to especially to 30, the difference is ridiculous.
Look at Chris Brooks, age 21. The dude's a stallion now. Wide boy. Big muscles on the kid.
Yeah.
21 years old Chris Brooks is a different story. And it just shows it does happen. And he's put the graft in. So
I remember watching a video of Chris Travis against Martin Stone. When Trav must have been 19, 20 years old. And he is the thinnest human being I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And not the person with ridiculous abs that he was, you know, in the peak of his career. And it's just that thing, it comes with time. Someone like Maverick Mayhew, who's obviously a little bloke now, by the time he's 25, will put us all to shame. Exactly. That's the thing that people don't realise, is like being massive doesn't come overnight. It requires a lot of work. Or cheating, and most people don't cheat these days.
Yeah, so. Try and be more natural. But like, even if you look at Millshot, like, you can see he's putting the graft in now, as is. So just thinking 3 years what he's going to look like is absolutely crazy.
When did you first don the mask?
I wrestled a tag match at Attack, where it was Mark Andrews and Pete Dunne as the Cobra Kai Dojo versus myself and Nixon Newell as the as Teen Wolf and his girlfriend, because we didn't know the name of the character. So she was just his girlfriend. So Teen Wolf and girlfriend was the graphic. That was the first time I did it, and then Attack reset itself that year when Mark got signed to TNA, and we did Mandarin Goes to America, and I was just kid like us from there. But for a year it was just dead in the water opening matches, because it's one of them characters, like, when you get given a mask, you either go two ways, especially when it's an animal mask. You either go full animal, which is what the Lycos character had been by the previous owner, or you make it a whole new thing. So like there's in Luchador's, Blue Panther's not a panther, he's just a dude in a mask.
He's a dude with a blue mask who's his rap.
That was something Pete was trying to drill into me from the get go, because not giving too much away, Pete donned the mask every so often at attack, especially on the when we did the Pontins tour, and he was just Pete donning the mask to an extent. Yeah. But he knew how to work that sort of character without going too far into the depths of it where it gets too obscure and weird.
Yeah.
So what me and Chris, obviously, we've probably talked about this before, but like me and Chris used to watch Dragon Age shows and we were like, we want to do this, and it fit perfectly with what I wanted to do with the mask character anyway, because the guys I looked up to and mask characters did what I wanted to do. And we'll get onto one of them in this list. But so then from 2016, I was bad guy, Lycos, and teaming with Brooks. And everything went from there, and now I'm what I am today. But like, it used to be terrible, it got better every time.
I think what I love the most about CCK, apart from your merch, which I am wearing now, is I've got so much of your merch. Someone nicked my last hat, so I had to get, because I came to see a Hope show that Chris was on, and I wanted to come to the show anyway, because now I'm not doing stand-up, I can watch more wrestling, but also I wanted a new hat because I love my death hat, and now I've got another one. But is the fact that you two, if imagine it in any major wrestling promotion in the world, would not put you two in a tag team together, and that's what I like the most about it, is it's shorter guy in wolf mask and big lad in a leather jacket.
But for me, it's always been more interesting anyway. Like,
it's good. That's what's so good is I want, like, I think wrestling's changed so much now that you can go, oh look, it's not a, because tag teams of opposites have always been there, but they're always really obvious, like hokey opposites.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just, why are they even in a team together?
It seems so weird to me though, because obviously there's tag teams that are the same that are really good. The Usos are incredible. The Young Bucks are incredible. All these different tag teams. But for me, when I was always watching wrestling, I was most interested in the weird contrast. So like Jack Evans and Roderick Strong is a great tag team.
Great tag team.
You've got a power guy and a flyer, and they should, like, realistically, they should never be friends. If you talk about wrestling point blank, like, he's a breakdancing hip hop dude. That's Roderick Strong, like, cardio machine. There's no reason they'd be hanging out. You wouldn't see Jack and Roddy in the gym together, realistically, if you talk about wrestling.
Yeah.
But they were one of the best tag teams, in my opinion. There's loads of tag teams like that, which are incredible. And I think having that variety makes a tag team better.
Yeah.
Because you have to mesh styles. You have to learn to work with different styles, which helps your tag team matches as a whole.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's... like, I was enjoying you guys' work because I've been watching it for a bit before you started working in progress. And the first time we saw you see it hitting the sort of moves that you hit, because no one else does them. And that's the bit that's great. And that to me is the charm of a tag team is, does this tag team do mad shit I've not seen anywhere else? Yes. Excellent. That's and also, cool. Because of my sensibilities of liking weird stuff and liking the weird and wonderful stuff from Japan and from Mexico and stuff like that, is I just look at you guys and go, well, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it's... I mean, your popularity is mental. Like, certainly the last couple of years is super exploding.
Yeah, popped off. Last year, especially being a breakout year, like, there was a sour note on the end for me, but obviously all these different things happen. Like, and you can see it pay off. Like, we saw it booming, we weren't sure how big it was, but then even things that some people, like, it matters so much to them, but like, we didn't know anything about the PWI 500 realistically. Like, we know it exists, but it's nothing we think about. But then we were in that quite highly rated.
Yeah.
And then even little things, like, there's I think there's a Wrestle Talk magazine now, and they did a ranking of British wrestlers, and we were highly rated in that, and that's crazy to think.
Yeah. But it's all well deserved as well, because, like, obviously I know you guys from behind the scenes, and you're lovely to work with, and, like, obviously I interviewed you both when you were in Brighton for Riptide, and that was a great chat, because, like, you've got a good relationship with each other, where you look after each other, you know, like, and but you just have this commitment to doing good stuff. Like, after every match that you guys have for us, like, you will always ask how well it went. I'll be like, you stand on the feet again, mate. Don't worry. Like, Brooks is terrible for it all the time. But like, was it okay? Yes.
What do.
But
good for everyone.
And that's a wonderful thing, because there'd be plenty of people. I don't think so much in the UK, because I think we've got a different, more humble mentality. But I think there'd be a lot of people who'd have the sort of year that you boys have had, and would then be like, yeah, we've completed wrestling now. Don't really need to put the work in anymore. Mm. And whereas you two only want to work harder and only coming up with ideas and stuff like that.
Even like now, we've tried to change up our style so that I can wrestle a more safer style. Mm. Brooks is putting in so much of a shift to keep me safe. He's the most underrated wrestler on the planet.
Oh, he's great. When he was announced for Battle of Los Angeles, I was so happy.
The most deserved name on that list.
So happy. I mean, regular listeners to this podcast will know what a fan of PWG I am. Mm-hmm. Excalibur's a friend of the podcast. Excalibur's a friend of mine. He's lovely. And like, the lineup's great anyway, but like, as soon as Brooks was announced, yeah. I think I saw it in the middle of the night as well. Yeah. I couldn't sleep. And I was just like, oh, I'm so happy. Yeah. So happy for him, because he's the best. Right, let's get to your list. So
okay.
I DM'd you on Twitter and I said, hey, Lycos, why don't we, because we live near to each other and it's the summer and you're at home.
Yes.
Why don't we come up with a list of obscure masked wrestlers to introduce the listeners of Tuesday Night Jaw to? And you've come up with that list.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about. This may well be the first in many of lists of wrestlers who know better than me coming up with better lists than I could ever come up with. I'll come up with a snappier name. Who have you got first, my friend?
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The first one I'm going to give you one that I don't know much about myself, but I've seen popping up recently. And a year ago, this would have been Bandido. I saw gifs of him and I was like, this dude's the craziest high flyer in the world.
Oh, now, so good.
High flyer, if you look at him now, he's a tank and he's a base for everyone. But there's this, there's a high flyer in Mexico popping up in CML called Audaz, I think. Okay. AUDAZ.
Right. I'm going to Google some of these while we're talking so I learn more.
Rob Viper, who used to make YouTube videos that I would download and then recut.
Yeah.
As we discussed earlier. Mm. Maybe on the podcast, maybe not, I can't remember. But he's crazy. Like, he's got the most incredible creative mind, seemingly. Mm. All these GIFs that are popping up of his wrestling and even just evades that he's doing.
Yeah. And it's
nuts.
It's just his debut was the 6th of January this year.
There you go. So this dude, honestly, search out I think he's called Lucha GIFs on Twitter, but it's Rob Viper.
Yeah.
And he puts these crazy GIFs of orders and just find as many as you can, because he's nuts. And then like, go and find the matches, because you can find CMLL quite accessibly on YouTube nowadays. Mm-hmm. And Lucha Libre, a lot of people shit on it and say it's harder to watch because of the way it is. But you got to look at the art form of it, and he's a king at it. He's what Mystico was 10 years ago. Like,
so this is...
So unique.
This is something that, when I was putting the book together, I people forget that Mystico won Wrestling Observer's Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah.
And he won Box Office Draw of the Year because he had a run right before he got signed to Sin Cara.
Yeah.
He had a run of unbelievable stuff in Mexico. La Mystica is one of my favourite ever finishing moves.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything he did was brilliant. And then he just couldn't adapt.
Yeah.
So you get some people who adapt, like Mysterio, obviously managed to adapt. And it's such a shame when people who are that talented don't get it. When people talk about not getting Lucha Libre, I always... Like I think my starting point for Lucha Libre, and I'm aware there's two Americans in this match,
mm-hmm.
is Art Barr and Eddie Guerrero against Hijo dos Santos and Oscar Jr.
Classic, yeah.
And I always point people in that direction because it's still got Lucha rules.
Power
drivers are banned, you tag out by leaving the ring, it's two out of three falls, like most tag matches are there. But it has all the heat in the world, and it was filmed in America, and it's got American commentary, which helps some people.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing I sometimes struggle with Lucha is it feeling slower.
Yes.
Than Japanese wrestling.
Yeah.
A great example of anyone from Mexico ends up in Dragon Gate, you can see a difference between
The
ones and the good ones are the ones who can make it in both places. I think is, you know, it's when Mil Máscaras was starting to go around the world. One of the reasons that he became the success he wasn't because he was a great wrestler, and as most wrestlers or biographers will tell you, he was a horrible human being.
Mm-hmm.
But was because he was big.
Yeah.
People always think luchador and they go, oh, obviously small. No. Alberto Del Rio used to wear a mask, but and he's 6'6".
There's a person on this list specifically who's got to be near 300 pounds, but he's one of the best high flyers ever, man. It's nuts, these guys.
I'm going to look some of up. Literally, until you'd mentioned him, I'd never heard of Ordaz. And there's going to be people. And again, you can tweet either myself, at Jim Small. What's your Twitter again?
At Kid Like Us.
Tweet either of us if you've got any other form of Lucha suggestions, especially GIFs. Because I like consuming wrestling in GIF form, I'm not going to lie. There's a company in... Is it in China now?
That's where Shima is now. Because
that stuff, like, some people sent me gifts of it, and it's the sort of thing that, you know, the people who think that Ricochet and Will Ospreay was killing the business.
Yeah,
because people are going to watch that.
They'll die. Like
it's Cirque du Soleil.
Honestly, Shima's always had an eye for the best high flyers in the world. That's why he's such a good talent scout. Like he was going to Mexico last year after he came to like Fight Club and scouting guys. And there's a guy called Moria. He apparently took a liking to or whatever. But I watched some of the stuff with those matches, and this dude's really good. But OWE seemingly is just a dream in that scenario because it's essentially a bunch of like Shaolin monks and kung fu masters and stuff, but they've learnt to wrestle.
It's a little bit like, for anyone who's familiar with Hustle, the Japanese promotion, you know what? It's like they watched some Attitude Era sports entertainment and went, yes,
yeah,
this is our version of it.
Yeah.
OWE very much feels like a Japanese/Chinese mix of someone going, I have watched some high flying wrestling. How do we take this even further?
See, they have a YouTube channel now as well that puts up just little training things. And one of the things I saw recently was one of their wrestlers does a front flip over 13 other men in a line. And that was part, like, they were doing a running drill that ended with that leap. And it's nuts. Like, I can do a front flip, but I couldn't do it over one person. This brother's going over 13. Think how long that is.
OWE is nuts. It's like Guinness Book of Records, isn't it? That it's like, how many people can we jump over? Don't even try.
Yeah. Just going for it.
When I was watching Will Ospreay and Jordan Devlin from our show on Sunday, spoilers, it's ridiculously good. They did. There was a couple of things they did in that match. I think Will did a space flying tiger drop at one point, which I always watch that and go, how do you learn to do that without dying?
I used to try so hard to get that because big Jack Evans fan. But the dudes who can do it, it's crazy. Especially the ones that do it so fluid. So like Ricochet, Desmond Xavier, Will. They have some of the cleanest ones I've seen. Like Jack always used to do it crazy, but Jack's a very... his high flying is always very different to the smoothness of, say, like, he always used to get compared to Seidel, because Seidel was smooth, but Jack was more crazy. And it's the same here, like, the guys who do it smooth, they're what dons, man, they can't.
I used to love Jack Evans. My first exposure to Jack Evans came from the Wrestling Channel, where they used to constantly play that music video. And the first time I thought, I just thought, dude looks like Eminem.
Yes,
that was my first thought, and then I was like, oh, doing that shit. Anyway, I'm gonna look at what it does, because it's that really cool thing of, like, I remember feeling that, certainly as a wrestling promoter in the UK, I was quite early to pick up someone like Flamita, because I'd been banging on about Flamita for about a year when we started putting Super Strong Style, and I just kept showing videos to John and Glenn, and eventually we got hold of him, because he's not good at answering emails, and eventually we got hold of him, and then he did great stuff, and then PWG started using him and stuff like that. I was like, yay, brilliant. But you would have been aware of him way before me, because you're a big Dragon
guy. And he was popping off. Like, obviously his style's maybe reduced now because he's a bigger person than he was 2 or 3 years ago. But he, again, like Ordaz and like Rey Fénix, he's one of the luchadors that was popping off as a crazy high flyer and then got some exposure. So like Dragon Gate saw him, brought him over, which then led to this. Mm. Same with Fénix, like he had Lucha Underground, which exposed how crazy he was, and then all the American companies brought him over. So if an American company or Lucha Underground, obviously they have a relationship with AAA, I guess, so they can't use CMLL guys, but even if Dragon Gate or anyone saw Ordaz, I think he would be a prime candidate to be selected for that sort of promotion, because he's doing things that I haven't seen before, and it's 2018, like, what can't you see done?
I love that, because I'm currently looking on luchawiki.com, and I like it because obviously there's a lot of sort of family lineage, isn't there, to quite a lot of Lucha Libre. It's got his family history. His father, his brother, his uncle, all wrestlers. Then there's a question mark about whether or not he's related to another wrestler, because they can't know.
They can't know.
And this is I found this out when I was researching my book, is when you do a mask versus mask match, for example, or a mask versus hair or whatever, if you have to wear a mask, you have to tell people your name and where you're from, which is really cool. Like, that adds so much. It's not just, here's my face. It's like, hello, I'm Steve.
I'm a real person.
I'm a real human. This is my name, and this is where I'm from. And that's how people have pieced together people's families in Lucha Libre, from people losing their masks.
Honestly, God forbid I lose mine.
Terrible. Sorry, man, I know where you live. Who's next?
Next on my list, we'll go to Japan. There's a wrestler in Dragon Gate called Shachioko Boy.
Now, I'm fairly sure I know this name, but equally, I'm going to do that thing of knowing that I've probably mispronounced it whenever I've tried to do this. So, so, how do I spell it?
S-H-A-C-H-I-O-K-O.
There we go. Boy. There he is.
Now, this boy, in quotation marks...
Because he was born in 1980, so not a boy.
He's not a boy. He's been in Dragon Gate for a long time, under various names.
Yeah.
He was, at one point, Shachioko Machine. At one point, he was She's a Boy. And at one point, he was doing both at the same time. I think Shachioko means killer whale. I could be wrong, because I think his mask is a killer whale.
Nice. I do love a aquatic theme.
Yeah.
Wrestler in
Super Delphine.
So Super Delphine, and also Naoki Tanizaki used to be
Mr. QQ
Dolphin,
Toyonaka Dolphin. Because love that's prime example of Dragon Gate. If you don't know Dragon Gate, there was a Tanizaki got hurt, so the faction he was in, that was a heel faction, brought in another wrestler to be Naoki Tanizaki. Tanizaki then returned as a babyface, and they feuded until they had a 40-minute match to decide who was the real Naoki Tanizaki. Now, the real Tanizaki lost and was renamed Mr. QQ Toyonaka Dolphin, because QQ sounds like a dolphin crying, and he was crying when he loses the match. They feud it, they keep wrestling. Eventually, he wins back his name, but decides no, because he was in the Jimmies, which is a popular babyface faction. He was going to be Mr. QQ Naoki Tanizaki Toyonaka Dolphin and keep the name to spite the people.
Everyone should watch Dragon Gate.
Dragon Gate's the best.
It's the best. Anyway, continue with Shachioko Boy.
So Shachioko Boy, he was just an opening match wrestler for a long time, but always did some unique things, I thought. He's, even in, like, they have a thing called Dragon Gate. It's not Next. It's Dragon Gate Studio. And he had a competition, again, to bring up Tanzaki's name, with him over the course of maybe 4 or 5 episodes for opening the Husky Gate, which was because they both have very coarse,
it says here, husky he has voices. A characteristically hoarse voice is the result of crushed vocal cords.
Yep.
A problem also suffered by Tomoki Honma and Genichiro Tenryu. How bizarre.
Yeah.
That's also what Brian Pillman had.
Yes.
Yes.
So he's a very unique character, but like, and in terms of wrestling, there's a very Japanese luchador style, like his finish is a moonsault like Muta. It's a great moonsault, but
really quick.
Yeah.
Not a big arc, just gone.
But always to the middle of the ring, like always really good. But he's always a very loved character on those shows, and even if you only see him in the opener for 4 minutes, he makes an impact in some way. And like all Dragon Gate wrestlers have a flash pin, but he does just a Casadora roll up, which is a wheelbarrow. And always a crazy reaction. And he's not seen as much anymore, but I've always thought like he was one of the roster members. Even though he's only a lower card roster member, you couldn't do without him on the show.
I always find that interesting that there are, especially in Japan, there are lower card wrestlers who are supremely respected.
Yeah.
The same in New Japan, All Japan, Noah. It's always been the case. Mm. Like Yano's a great example of someone in New Japan, for example, who we were talking about this before we started recording. Some people just would not get what it's about at all. Japanese people do.
Yeah,
they get him and you know, completely get him and understand what he's there.
That's what I like about that wrestling, because you need those roster members and you can't respect them less based on their position. Like Kurt Hawkins should be respected really highly for what he does.
Yeah.
Because without them, you don't have stars. You can't make a star by having him beat just randomers. You need established talent that he beats.
And also, people forget, like, you get paid the same.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just insider information. You get paid the same if you win or lose. His name, I'm certain his name came up when I was reading... my friend Arnold Furious wrote a couple of books, 3 books actually, 2 books that were published and 1 book that hasn't been published, but he sent me the manuscript of him just watching a year's worth of Japanese wrestling, and that's where his name came up.
Yes.
Because I know he likes Dragon Gate. I think he was the first person that I read. I think I read a review of a Flamita match and then went and sought it out and then was blown away. So, you know, it's him. Cheers, Arn.
Yeah.
All right, who's next?
I'll go to the United States and we'll talk about Equinox.
Who was Shikara, correct?
Yes. Played by 2 different people, but both interesting.
I'm going to put Equinox Wrestler in Google, because if I put Equinox in, we just get a lot of somersaults, this stuff.
So as you see there, you get 2 names. You get Jimmy Olsen and you get Vin Gerard. Now, Vin Gerard was the original Equinox between, I say, 2005 and 2007.
Correct. Says it just there. Excellent.
He wrestled a high-flying style.
Yeah.
One of the very first Chikara matches I saw, maybe 3rd or 4th one in, I saw a 4-way between him, Pac, Lince Dorado, and I want to say Ricochet, but I might be wrong there. Crazy match. And he does a tope into an arm drag. Like, there's some nuts Lucha Libre in there. But he was the original character, and he was one of Chikara's young babyface master wrestlers. He was built up as... because Chikara was feuding with a bunch of different wrestlers on their roster, like Fist was a team in their roster, and Chris Hero was one of the main heels. And he feuded with Chris Hero, leading to a mask versus hair match, which was built around the fact that no heel knew the counter to the Chikara special, which was Quack and Wish's invention.
Yes.
Hero counters the Chikara special and takes Equinox's mask.
Nice.
So Vin Gerard goes on this path and turns heel because he's lost his identity. Eventually, around 2009, maybe, Jimmy Olsen and Vin Gerard are feuding. And I can't remember the circumstances, but Jimmy Olsen begins donning the same mask.
Yeah.
And becomes the second Equinox incarnation. He has a run where he wins the Young Lions Cup and he beats Vin Gerard. He teams with Helios, which was Ricochet, and he teams with Lince Dorado and Jigsaw.
I remember some of those matches. I definitely had some of those on DVD.
And they were incredible. Like, Jimmy's a very underrated wrestler, I think. If you watch him wrestle, especially in the mask, because that mask is horrible. I wrestle in a mask. I know how horrible some masks are to work in. This mask has no eye holes and no mouth hole. It's completely covered. It's just, like, the dude must have had crazy cardio and crazy vision.
Because it's a bit like the Sin Cara mask, the original Sin Cara mask is very... It's
exactly like that, but with no eyes.
See, this is a question I want to ask. Is I worry about wrestlers' peripheral vision in masks. Because obviously I'm sat in there without a mask on, I've got full peripheral vision, it's not a problem. But obviously when you put your mask on, and like, there's been times like you've done promos with your mask on, and I can see you have to pull the mask in a certain direction to be able to open your mouth properly and stuff like that. Do you just get used to it?
Yeah, I think you get used to it. Like, there's still times where it'll affect you. Like, it'll get twisted sometimes, and even a slight alteration will throw you off. There's a funny moment on a Progress show, if you want to search it out, where Pete Dunne and British Strong Style are beating myself and Chris Brooks down, and my mask turns slightly, and then Pete rags me up and goes to bail me out of the ring. But I can't see what's going on, so I'm like, oh, I guess he's going to give me a pedigree, because that was the thing he was doing at the time. But then when he ragdolls me out of the ring, I'm not ready, because I can't see.
Yeah.
So I just hit the ropes and take a bump, like,
bless.
And I was, it's real funny to think about, because I just started laughing, because I was like, oh no, that's going to look hilarious. And like, we all laugh about it on the training stuff, but it's just, sometimes you lose your vision, one alteration can change, like, the guys like Liger and stuff, and what's his name, Grand Metallic, the way they see, I don't know how, because if I had mesh on my eyes, I think I'd die.
So, I mean, just looking at the two incarnations of Equinox. I think what's surprising is both guys are retired now.
Yes,
as well, which is, well, it seems a shame to me. Like, I mean, they're like these decades, a decade in wrestling and stuff like that. But these guys are still in the early 30s, and obviously, but I think that's the thing with Shikara is there's some people who come through Shikara and they'll be massive stars.
Yes,
and there's some people who just do it for a bit and are great, and then just go see you later.
And like, sometimes you don't even know. Like, some of the masked guys in Shikara go off and do other things, and you don't even realise until later on.
Like, that's
what's happened.
Well, that's the thing as well. Is I'm certain if I go back, I've still got some Shikara DVDs, and I bet I didn't realise. I'm sure someone may have told me that Ricochet was Helios, and I've definitely watched him wrestle.
Yeah,
but. And I probably read that at some point, but I wouldn't have known that for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and because it is a proper lucha company, and they do protect it and all that. And you can watch it and go, I'm fairly sure I know one of these guys. There's a guy now, it definitely used to be one of the Ants. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice that it is hidden. And also, there's people who have a gimmick somewhere else where they can go and put a mask on and do something a bit different.
Yeah.
Which I know that. Jimmy Havoc's a great example of who used to wrestle as El Transexico for Lucha Britannia. Yeah. I don't know, there's a lot of people who used to, I think Will used to wrestle with my master,
Robert
did, and everybody. And it's, I think that's cool. I think it's quite a sort of freeing thing to do.
Yeah, it's nice to have that change. I think a lot of attack guys used to do that. There were certain wrestlers who did masks and themselves on attack shows, and it's a freedom
get
to
booked
be,
twice, mate.
It's a freedom to be different and get that double pay.
Get two payments. Who's next on the list?
I'll talk about... well, we talked about Shachioka Boy, so I'll talk about Super Shiza, who, I guess, was his mentor when he was Shiza Boy, and that was always linked when they were team. Super Shiza's a... I think he's one of the head trainers now in Dragon Gate.
48 years old.
Yep.
Wonderful mask that looks like it has a beard built into it.
Yes.
Which is quite beautiful.
It's... I can't quite think where the reference is from for Super Shiza, but the mask is incredible. I'd search out as a whole, but he was in the same era as Shima, Don Fuji, Masaki Mochizuki, all those guys in that first class.
Yeah, so debuted 1996. So
yeah. So he debuted as Saito, as we have on the Wikipedia here, and wrestled without the mask. Can't remember when he started being Super Shiza, but maybe before the Toriumon Dragon Gate split started happening. A very unique style. Like, he's very technically sound, but can still do innovative high flying things. Like, he is the first person I saw do the Code Red, but if you know that move, you know they flip forwards.
Yes.
He will rotate sideways and almost side flip the guy. And that's his one of his big finishes.
Invented the Yoshi tonic as well, apparently, really? According to Wikipedia. So, which is, I have a thing. I love reading wrestlers' move sets on Wikipedia. The in wrestling bit at the bottom. I also love it when anyone's got they've got several versions of the move. There is 6 versions of the Saito special: handstand crossface, Saito special 2. Handstand figure 4 leg lock, Saito special 3, handstand inverted Gansuke clutch, Saito special 4, handstand mule kick, Saito special 5, handstand sunset flip, Saito special 6, handstand inverted crossface.
You see what
that
I mean?
I can't even figure out how to do a handstand inverted crossface.
Very technical wrestler, but also, as you can see, agile, especially for his size. He's got to be...
He's a bigger lad. He's 5'10", 170, so bigger compared to...
Especially in Dragon Gate, like, if you look at the average weight of Dragon Gate wrestlers, it's about 150 to 160, so heavier than most.
Yeah.
Again, just like more of an opening match wrestler, but in the sense of helping the younger talent. Like, he's always wrestling the young boys coming up.
And this is the cool thing in that, you know, these are... In the case of Tsubushisa, it's a name that I've seen... No real concept. You know, you occasionally read a name.
Yeah, it's just one of those guys.
And now, what this podcast is making me want to do is go, right, I'm going to seek some stuff out.
He's had American exposure as well. Like, he did Chikara back in the day and all these different things. So, he's wrestled in places like the less niche audience will know of, but they can't tell you a match they've seen of his. But you might have seen one without knowing.
Yeah, it was in King of Trios in 2011, in a team with Kagetora and Akira Tozawa.
There you go.
Akira Tozawa, I love dearly, and I've told the story many times on this podcast. All he could say in English the first time I met him was, "There are many blonde women here. Many blonde women."
I want to meet that man so bad.
he's great. He's the best sent on since Dick Togo.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I don't think it's necessarily the nicest move in the world to take. I think he just squashes you like your tube of toothpaste, and you need to hope that you don't have full bowels.
Yeah.
What a guy!
He's one of the best. Like, if you want to seek out a non-luchador from this experience, just watch any Tozawa Dragon Gate match. He's one of the hardest working wrestlers alive.
When we first started Progress, he was on our wish list. I had a big 3 wish list of people I really, really wanted to book just around the time they all got signed. So Tozawa was one of them, because Colt Cabana introduced me to him. Tozawa was one, and right at the time we were trying to contact him, he just got signed.
Yeah.
205. Pac was another. First time we met him, 2 weeks later he was signed.
Yeah.
And Kevin Steen / Kevin Owens was the other. They were my big wish list, and all of them got signed. So, you know, if you want to get signed, basically get on my wish list to be booked for Progress, and you will end up.
Just got to avoid that booking for the longest time.
You will end up. Oh dear. Cool. I'm gonna look up. So she's like, who is next?
We'll go back to Mexico. We'll look at Dynastia.
So how am I spelling that, so people know?
Dynastia.
Dynastia.
Maybe AAA afterwards. That'll be the best way to find me.
Oh, here he is.
Dynastia is a mini in AAA.
Oh, so to some people might not be aware of mini. So it's anyone under 5'4", isn't it?
Yes.
And it's not strictly speaking anyone who is afflicted with dwarfism, because sometimes it's just like Rey Mysterio was very close to being a mini.
Yeah, he was a mini for his first maybe 6 matches in AAA.
And then, I mean, he's only 5'5", maybe, so he only just went over it. So my first exposure to minis was, ironically, Max Mini, and the minis that WWE used inexplicably in, like, 1998 for a bit.
And randomly out the
just
blue,
and the, but the matches they were having were absolutely great, amazing. Because these guys can do, like, Max Mini was Mascarita Dorado, wasn't
yep.
he? Yeah, and he was just ridiculously good.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Mascarita Sagrada, not Dorado. Dorado.
Oh, yeah, Dorado. Yeah.
Mascarita, because the eater means small.
Yes.
Sagrada. And I used to read in the Wrestling Observer, like, Meltzer was giving him 4-star matches for mini matches. I remember thinking,
incredible.
No, surely they're just a novelty. And then they took it so, it's taken so seriously in Mexico. Yeah. And it's not it's not a sideshow attraction, which is what I think people worry about, because if you're an exposure to minis, is seeing the poor guy dressed
Caminito
being drop kicked off the apron by
Ultimo Guerrero.
Then you are. That's not the right viewpoint.
Yeah.
They are treated as equally as everybody else in Mexico, and it's as they should be. And it's brilliant. I've not watched a minis match in ages.
There's some good ones. Like, I used to have Triple Mania 2011 on DVD, and there's a minis 6-man ladder match on there, which is incredible. And there's also a 6-man tag which features Mini Abismo Negro, Mini Psicosis, and Mini Charlie Manson versus Masquerita Sagrada, Masquerita Dorada, and I want to say someone called Suki, maybe?
Yeah.
And when I was 11, 12, that was one of the craziest 6-mans I'd ever seen in my life. Like, and Dynasty is one of the better minis nowadays, in Great Nick. It's pretty heavy for a mini, to be fair.
£132, but only 4'11" as well. So if you think about it, like, Mark Andrews is £155 and he's, what, 5'?
Flash Morgan's 150, like.
Yeah, so he's chunkier. But at the same time, signature move, corkscrew moonsault.
Yep.
Of course he is.
He used to be the Twisted Bliss. he was the first person I saw do that.
Amazing.
And he's a really unique high flyer, and he's done stuff everywhere now. Like, he used to just be a AAA mini and that was it, but AAA obviously has branched out in different places, but also AAA wrestlers can do independents in some way, because AAA shows are licensed out, as opposed to doing house shows everywhere. They license them out. So he's worked in Japan, in Korakuen Hall, and all these different places. Just a very good mini to start with if you're looking at more recent footage, because a lot of people get turned off as well by how bad the quality of footage used to be, especially in AAA back in the day. Like, it took them until 2012 to get HD, so you don't want to go back and watch potato footage. So watching Dynasty now when they're in crisp high definition.
I wonder if there's, do you remember the old WWF at the time, Lucha program, Super Astros?
Yeah,
I wonder if there's much footage of that still knocking around. It's still not on the network. It'd be great if it was, because that's you know, when they used to have their relationship with AAA around. It was AAA, wasn't it? Not CML. Yeah, it was AAA.
Yeah, because that was where the minis were mainly more focused.
And they started having their relationship around the time, I think, the Royal Rumble that Shawn Michaels won in 95, 96, because it was in San Antonio, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Because that was heavy metal and people like that on the show. I'm on the AAA website now, so there's a massive picture of La Parca, but he's not called La Parca, he's called L.A. Park. who used to use him on WCW NWO Revenge on the Nintendo 64, mainly because he did the funny dance.
Yeah, so you want.
And then hit people with chairs.
WCW Backstage Roll is a great character to use.
Yeah, he's just so good, and it's mad that he's still wrestling and doing.
Yeah.
But also doing like quite cool stuff as well, I think, at the minute, from what I was reading.
I mean, he's dabbing, so it's pretty up to date.
Yeah, that's right. And who's next?
We'll go to Tursus,
which is Tursas. Shikara again, right?
Again, yes. A different sort of character to what you usually see in.
I know why. Because he was in BDK, wasn't he?
He was in the British After Crisis, yes.
Which is is a brilliant stable when you just know all the people who are in that stable.
Yeah.
Like, it's. I'm going to bring the stable up and tell you all the people who are in that stable, and you'll be like, shit, son.
As an aside, why he finds this one of the best reveals of all time. If you watch, like, you don't have to watch the 6 months build up to it, but if you just watch that 10-minute piece when they all reveal themselves and the different characters interlink with their different storylines, it's insane.
So, members of the British After Scorsers, which is German for Brotherhood of the Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Aries, who, not Austin Aries, the Swiss wrestler who broke in the same time as Claudio Castagnoli / Cesaro, Daisy Hayes, Delirious, Derek Sabato, Dieter von Stiegewald, who was actually Tracy Williams, Jacka, Jacob Hammermeyer, Lince Dorado, Milo Schnitzler, Nuken, which is a great name. Pinky Sanchez, who I used to love.
Love Pinky Sanchez.
Sarah Del Rey, who regular listeners to this podcast will know, is possibly the greatest wrestler to never have wrestled for WWE, I think. Like, just so good. And obviously it works out now, but yeah. Just so good. Soldier Ant, Tim Donst, who I also love, and Tursus, who we're now referring to. So, it was... Because I remember... I'm trying to remember Tursus' mask. There we go. There's a great picture. Because it vaguely... is brilliant.
Yeah, it's an incredible mask.
It's got... I'd like to think that beard's built into the mask, but I don't know. So Tursus, bigger lad.
Yep. Based on Norse mythology.
Yeah.
Kind of a Viking-esque character. But especially in Chikara, where it's Lucha Libre based and a lot of smaller wrestlers, stood out quite considerably because he's 300 pounds, 6 foot five, 6 foot six, easy.
Mm.
Very different
yeah.
character.
And that's because it's reminding me now of when I saw him in Chikara, and it being, because the BDK was such a cool stable anyway,
mm-hmm.
and the leading villains in the company for quite some time. And they did that because most of them were bigger.
Yes.
Like even Sarah Del Rey was bigger than most of the luchadors.
Cesaro.
And having the guys who were big and strong against guys like the Assyrian Portal and stuff like that and the Colony, it was such a good sort of clash of styles, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it made it stand out. And also just looked like people were having fun. There's a great picture I've just seen here of Claudio Castagnoli next to Tursus, and it's just, it looks so sinister with that mask on as well, because his mask reminded me a little bit, because of the horns and stuff, reminded me a little bit of Vader's thing that he used to come out in Japan.
Oh, the elephant thing. Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of that, but with added grey beard. Oh, it's quality.
It's such a unique look, and was always a cool thing to have on a show, because one thing Chikara does really well is having different matches. A lot of matches can be the same on a wrestling card, just because we're all in this style of knowing what's good.
Yeah.
But Tursus would come out and squash dudes, but then when he had that one match where he was selling big for someone, and it made everything so much better. So like he'd wrestle some of the ants and he'd just kill them, but then he'd have a six foot eight exactly. And then so Fire Ant would be firing up on him, and you'd see like almost like a chink in the armor of Tursus, and like he'd start selling bigger and bigger and bigger, and Fire Ant would hit a big high kick and then a dive. And that moment is so cool to see in any wrestling promotion. Like, any character can do it. Like, if you see that underdog finally get that up on the big bully, it's big in whatever scenario. But then a character in such a character complex area like Chikara, it makes the storyline even infinitely more interesting, especially with the BDK, who were unbeatable. Like, if you watch any Chikara show... Even like if I drop an example, like there's a show called We Must Eat Michigan's Brain. Every match that the BDK is in, quick, straight to the point, and they win.
Yeah.
Even in the more extended matches, like there's one Lince and Pinky versus, I want to say, Fire Ant and maybe Green Ant or Soldier Ant. Might not even be that show, but it's a more extended match than any of the others on that card, but the BDK are still strong, no matter what. And that's why I like Tursus, because I think he adds variety to a card. And like he came back in other recent storylines where they mixed past things together with the future stuff. And again, just immediately, there's a spot for him because he's unique and stands out and can be good on a card anyway.
This is just reminding me of something. You know how Solstice Chikara stopped for a while?
Yes.
Do you know how they relaunched?
They did the film and...
But also they sent letters to people, didn't they? So they posted letters to people saying, like, really anonymous, almost like anonymous ransom letters, basically saying, we're coming back.
Yeah, they kidnapped, like, they had Frightmare kidnapped. Icarus was, like, the only wrestler apparently, like, leading the Chikara thing at the time. And he was, like, holding, like, shows in parks showing Chikara was still alive, and like he was on the Rocky Steps handing out t-shirts saying "We are Chikara" and stuff.
So cool.
They built to a climax where like they came back and had the show, and then they released the film, which was almost like it's essentially a 30-minute promo of what happened to build to this to Icarus leading the charge. And it's obviously within the realms of wrestling. If you don't know wrestling, you think, oh, that's stupid, but it's incredibly cool to see. Like, it's funny to see all the storylines intertwine. So Chikara's always been great at that, and like those sorts of things with Fire and Icarus and all them coming back was
creative as well. This is the thing with especially the older voices in wrestling. So this is something I was talking to someone about this week, because, and I've spoken about it on the podcast before, Vader was one of my favourite ever big wrestlers. Will Ospreay is one of my favourite ever high flying wrestlers and a friend.
Yes.
So it sucked when Vader was rude about Will Ospreay. I thought Will was very gracious when Vader passed away, and rightly everyone was sad about it because Vader's one of the best big men ever.
Yeah.
And I thought he was really, and I tweeted about it and said, look, I know he didn't like much in modern wrestling, but I thought he was great.
Yeah.
And I thought Will was really gracious about how he was very much like, you know, we didn't get on, but I'm sad about this, and pass on my best regards. And I thought that was really good. But it's that weird old school mentality of, someone put a video, a fan video of Will and Jordan up from the weekend.
Yeah, I saw it.
And it's, spoilers now, if you want to wait to be blown away by this match. So spoilers now, I know I'm talking to my computer when the voice recorder's there, but spoilers now, I'll give you 2 seconds to just mute me for maybe 30 seconds while I tell you what happened. So they do a Spanish fly on the top rope. They both land on their feet, and then it ends up being, they didn't do a standing Spanish fly in the ring,
yep.
Which Jordan comes off worst from.
Yeah.
Then Will goes to moonsault off the top rope onto him, lands on his feet because Jordan moves. He then tries to do it again forwards, does a standing shooting star and stuff like that, then goes on the top rope. And it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous sequence of moves by a man who's a magician. And straight away underneath, there's people going, my God, that's amazing. There's people underneath that go, it's not wrestling.
Yeah.
And that thing of... So Marty Jones has been to a Progress show. And Marty, I like Marty because Marty's one of my favourite wrestlers from my youth. And afterwards, I said to him, you enjoy it? And he went, oh, yeah. I went, did you really enjoy it? He went, oh, it was bits I absolutely hated, which I would have expected. Because, you know, he's 72 years old.
That's different.
And a very, very different wrestler.
Hmm.
Johnny Saint's the same sort of person. Johnny will say, he can appreciate why a show's popular and why wrestlers are over, but it's not going to be what he grew up. But he also understands that times change.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with someone like Vader. Vader was doing moonsaults in 1990.
Yeah.
He was. And there would have been, imagine how many old school guys would have been saying to him, why are you going off your feet, you're 400 pounds?
Yeah.
Like, and it's the same with something like Chikara, like you're saying, if you show that to a non-wrestling fan, they're going to go, what is this? But wrestling fans get it.
Yeah.
And that's what always drew me into Chikara. And I think, you know, I remember showing John Chikara DVDs before we came up with the idea for Progress. And John's very involved in Freedom's Road and stuff, which is very different to professional wrestling.
I remember when back in time and stuff. Yeah, there.
And that's part of that is because there's companies like Chikara exist and Lucha Underground exists. You know, they're very different. And, you know, and again, the whole, you've got a lot of wrestlers in masks. You can do crazy stuff some of the time. It's cool. Right, next up.
Who have I done? We'll go Magnitude Kishiwada.
Amazing. Right, so Magnitude, I can spell.
English word.
Right, and then, there we go, Kishiwada.
Yep.
Magnitude Kishiwada.
Which I believe is a prefecture in Japan, or a city maybe.
It is. There he is. 47 years old, trained by Mr. Pogo, a man with a sickle, and Super Delphin.
Yep. He's a
dolphin.
He's an Osaka-based wrestler. I first saw him through a Best of Jack Evans DVD, which had Dragon Gate on, which is with my exposure to Dragon Gate as well.
He's a big lad. He's 231 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
5'8". So, for reference, he's built like Taz.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably the best suggestion.
Very different guy when I saw him in Dragon Gate, because a lot of the mass wrestlers at that point in Dragon Gate were high flyers. So you had Dragon Kid, K-Ness, and all these different high flyers. He was the first heavyweight guy I'd seen like that. A very strong, like strong style cliche, but it's a very strong style compared to like up there with Shingo and stuff. but at the time filling that heel heavyweight role pretty well. But like, he'd been around for ages doing Osaka Pro. He'd had a bunch of different names.
I saw some Osaka Pro stuff when I was tape trading. It's all that stuff was mental. Because that's Delphin's promotion, isn't it?
And like, I think Gamma might be a part owner of the new Osaka Pro now, which Gamma, good friends with Kishiwada, like, Dragon Gate recently did Gamma's 20th anniversary of wrestling, and Kishiwada came back for that show.
Cool.
Which was dope to see. But he always stood out to me because you had the Muscle Outlaws, which was a group he was in, which had guys like Masato Yoshino, Naruki Doi, Gamma, who were not heavyweights per se, but heavyweights in Dragon Gate, but were very speedy, fast wrestlers, and all very different. So Yoshino and Doi were the speed muscle tag team, and Gamma was the like a very despicable, gross heel leader almost, who feuded with Shima. But Kishiwada made an impact because he was always after the belt and filling a role at CyberCon that he fills now in being the biggest man in the company and the hardest man to beat in that aspect. So like, especially the young guys would have a tough time because they'd have to build matches around Kishiwada being unbeatable.
Yeah.
And then they'd finally, again, like with Tertius, they'd find that chink in the armor, but then he'd shut it down and win. And again, like that variety on a show always meant more to me than watching them. Because I wouldn't always have the same speed. And Dragon Gate's always been good at it. Kara's good at it. Having that variety. So having Kishiwada on a show meant it was completely different in certain matches.
Variety is so important. Like, I remember sending a Dragon Gate show to John and Glenn to watch around the time we were thinking of booking for Meter.
Yeah.
And me saying to them, watch this whole show's nuts.
Mm.
And every match is you might look at the wrestlers and go, they all look fairly similar, but yeah. I assure you everyone's style is different. And,
yeah.
And they both watched it and loved it. And it was genuinely very, very good. I'm just reading this about Manichu Kishiwada. His Wikipedia page. During his high school life, Fujita is his real name, the ideal three things he could have done to become a professional wrestler. He trained in mixed martial arts, powerlifting, and artistic gymnastics.
There you go.
Boom. You can be a wrestler, mate.
Well done. I just love his names. If you look at his names list.
Magnitude Kishiwada, Big Boss, M-A-G-M-A. So, because I always worry about how to pronounce these, because I've been for ages pronouncing B.B. Hulk wrong.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, it's B-X-B Hulk.
B-X-B Hulk.
No, it's B.B. Hulk.
Yeah.
Monster Zeta Mandora,
that's my favourite.
Toriu, Dragon Winger, and Magnitude Tokyo. And the magnitude part of his name comes from the magnitude of an earthquake and the name of his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Good work. So he's basically, it's like me being called like Earthquake Wrexham.
Yeah.
which will be a great name.
He is the earthquake of Osaka Pro, Dragon Gate, when he was there.
Oh, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, quality. Who's next?
Valiente.
And for again, for the listeners, how do we spell it so they can look him up?
Valiente.
There we go. Who's he mainly wrestling
for? He's a CMLL wrestler.
Let's put CMLL in so we get the right guy. Got a Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 44 years old now, 5'7", 203 pounds, from Mexico City. I find it interesting as well. Again, having learned a bit about Mexican wrestling, is obviously Mexico City is the main place where most people are from.
Yep.
But then there's really cool territories like Tijuana's got its own little cool territory, which is where Rey and Psicosis came from,
yes,
wasn't it? And I find that side of things really interesting in that. You know, in America, there's definitely different styles of wrestling, and
yeah,
you know, depending on where you're from and all that sort of stuff. But in Mexico, even though it's a massive country with loads of people in, it's kind of Mexico City and Tijuana are the two big places.
Yeah, the big areas. Like, Mexico City is the home base of CMLL, so like Arena Mexico is always set up and has a training facility in there for
16,000 people. It holds the biggest purpose-built wrestling arena in the world.
Exactly. And then AAA, I think, is based in Mexico City as well, but doesn't have a base like Arena Mexico.
No. They are both based there. I know this from my research.
And, yeah.
And I think the Crash are based in Tijuana.
Yes, that's where they're based.
And then obviously Lucha Underground are not based in Mexico at all.
No.
They're based in Los Angeles. And
there's a new one in
Ara Lucha.
Yeah.
Who are based, I want to say based in Texas.
Yeah, Texas.
Because they're run by the Harris brothers.
Are they?
Which didn't is know weird. That bit. Yeah, run by the Harris. Well, I think the Harris brothers marketing company might run them or something okay. like that. But it's, yeah, I remember reading about it and going, that's weird.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Lucha Libre hasn't popped off more because of the influence of Lucha Underground, because I think yeah. Lucha Underground's brought in people from outside.
Yeah, I think still to an extent people will watch Lucha Underground and go, oh, this is Lucha Libre, but Lucha Underground's a very Western product in the sense of the wrestling. Like, it's a very big mishmash of styles. Like, you still get the occasional Lucha heavy match, but you've got guys from different areas. You've got John Morrison, and then you've got like Jack and Angelico were there, Sammy Callahan, like, all these
Cobb.
Dudes Cobb, exactly. Like, these dudes have an influence on the way the luchadors also wrestle. So, you know, you're not going to get a Lucha Libre classic putting Brian Cage versus Argenis, but you're going to get a match of styles,
yeah.
which is like not better, but infinitely just as good.
Mm. So, I think the Lucha Underground thing for me, I really enjoy Lucha Underground, but I think the thing that's interesting about Lucha Underground is it feels a little bit like. So, you know, it feels a little bit like a Tarantino film.
Yeah,
in
I get that.
And it's got that sort of, it's deliberately designed to feel like a sort of grindhouse sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to, like, Tarantino will bring a film out, say Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
And people will go, oh, it's brilliant, it's just like the old Nazi exploitation films, and talk about it like that. And you'll go, okay, have you watched it? Nice yeah. exploitation films, because I did at university. You'll probably know this because you know a bit about media and stuff. But when I was at university, one of the things I wrote about for one of my big assignments was about the video nasties that were banned in Britain in the 1980s.
Yeah.
There was, I think, I want to say 48 or 53 films. I've got it depends on the list, but there was a big load of often terrible horror films that were banned on video because of the moral panic around video nasties in the early 80s. And some of them are still banned now. Some of them are good films, like Zombie Flesh Eaters, which is a good film that was eventually allowed to be released uncut. And you watch it uncut, and there's some amazing gory special effects in it.
Yeah. But
like, compared to how violent films are now, it's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And then there's some films that are just absolute rotten garbage, and most of those are the Nazi exploitation films. And what gets me, when Inglourious Basterds came out, it was a lot of people all of a sudden became experts on these films. I've watched four of them. Mm. I had to watch them as part of my university assignment. Yeah. I felt physically sick after watching them because they were rotten. They're terrible films, and the subject matter is awful. And you feel unclean after watching them. And for people to go, oh, he's doing that. Yeah, Tarantino's definitely watched that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's influenced by all kinds of mad shit. But I find that some people will watch Lucha Underground and then all of a sudden go, oh, well, now I'm an expert on Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of, it's an appropriation of something very cool for a very different audience.
It's the same with any wrestling, though. Like, there'll be people who watch Progress and think they're an expert on the British Indies, but they're not. And like, I don't pretend to know extreme amounts about Lucha Libre or anything. I know
a lot more than me, mate.
I knew what I knew as a kid, and I know what I still look up to, which is like why I've only just found Ordaz. I know he's only just debuted as that character, but it's what, June of this year, and he's been doing this stuff since January. So the fact I've only just found him now, like, I don't know that much. Like, Rob Viper's a legitimate expert on Lucha Libre, so this guy especially, I used to love watching growing up because he's a big boy, but he was the first person I ever saw do a double jump moonsault to the outside. But different to how most people do a double jump. Like, the Escalera is the, like, Carl Fletcher does it now, where he does step, flip, dive.
Yeah.
He does the Escalera different in the sense that he'll bounce both feet facing outwards on one rope in the corner, then jump backwards to the other rope. So without seeing middle rope facing outwards, backwards to the top rope, and then moonsault from there. And this dude, like, you look at Wikipedia, he's a big dude.
203 pounds, but only 5'7".
Yeah.
So heavier than me. And, you know, I'm not skinny, but I'm not a massive lad. And, you know, I think I'm 180 pounds.
Mm.
So And I'm 5'10". So he's a big lad. He's a big lad. Valiente is Spanish for valiant, expressed by the sword icon on his mask. I love. There was a book ages ago. I wish I bought it. It was in an Urban Outfitters. I saw it. And it was a massive coffee table book. Like,
yeah.
It's the only place you see those books now is Urban Outfitters. And normally, nearly every book that you can buy in Urban Outfitters is a bit wanky. Unless my book's sold in there, at which point it's a brilliant shop. But it was like a proper, like, big coffee table book, big, sort of almost A3 sized.
Yeah.
And it was just photos of luchadors. And it was so one page would be an interview with a luchador, and the other page would be a really cool colour photograph of him. I wish I'd bought it. I think I'm going to look it up on Amazon. I'm certain you can still buy it, and one day I'm going to buy myself as a treat, because it's honestly, it was insane. Just all these pages, and like some of them were people I'd heard of.
Yeah.
So like Blue Demon Jr. was in there.
Yeah.
Hujo Dos Santos was in there, and like I was reading it, going, "This is brilliant." And then there's some people I'd never heard of, and the interview with them would be like, "Yeah, I like I work in a restaurant."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "This is the absolute best." I'm gonna have to.
Mexico's a wild place, man. Like Shaka was on top in Mexico for a while, and like. There's a documentary on Lucha Libre on Netflix, which Chris Brooks introduced me to, which go and watch that. It's really good. But Shaka gets hurt, but he owns a restaurant. So he just decides to be a waiter in that restaurant while he's hurt with his knee injury.
Amazing.
So they'll do things like that. But they're still famous. As...
Yeah, it is. It's paperback, but it weighs 4 kilos. It's just called Lucha. It's in Spanish. The one version I saw was in British, but it was in English rather. But it's just nuts. It's just low. It's a fashion photographer that took all these pictures. So there's a picture there. That's Blue Demon, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a picture there of Blue Demon. And yeah, I can get it for $28.99. I'm gonna buy it in a bit. I'm literally gonna buy it. I'm gonna buy it and I'm gonna bring it to a show and show it to you.
I'm really
364 pages.
How's that compared to your book, eh?
My book's got more pages, but my book doesn't weigh 4 kilograms.
So there you go, better value there. Right.
And also, you'll be able to, unless you speak Spanish, but I'm going to buy that a bit. I'm well excited. So, let's go back to Valiente. So
he was a guy who really influenced me. When I was younger, because again, a bigger guy doing high flying didn't see often, but he's always a very up card guy. Like it wasn't always, but 2005-2006 he's starting to reach, like, move up from the mid card, and then so on from there became one of the top guys. He was wrestling Ultimo Guerrero a lot, Rey Bucanero in like six mans and tag matches. Just a really unique case of classic Lucha Libre, like the Negro Navarro style of submission. Yayave, I think it's called. I can't pronounce it properly because I don't speak Spanish, but Yayave, I guess. Negro Navarro is like a very influential guy in that sense. It's submission based wrestling, which is a classic Lucha Libre thing, which you can now compare to the high flying. But he was a big mix match of both. But for a bigger guy, that was unheard of. Like, you had Blue Panther Atlantis just doing the technical stuff. And they're the same size, but Valiente was flying through the air. And very unique.
Never lost his mask.
Mm-hmm.
Still knocking around, still wrestling as well, which is good. So there's a good thing here about his personal life, and this will be something that some people might not know. How Mexican wrestling works. So in the case of El Hijo del Santo, literally is El Hijo means El Hijo del means the son of. So El Hijo del Santo is the son of the saint. El Santo is the arguably the most famous luchador of all time. It's between him, Blue Panther, and Mil Máscaras, thing. And he El Santo was in like 50 films.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're rotten, but watch them, they're great.
Yeah.
Like, they're the proper B-movies, where he is a wrestler on the side, but he's really a superhero.
Yeah.
And they're great. They're so good. Some of them are, they're so camp, but so, so great.
It's like bad lucha running around that sense. Yeah. The telenovela, but you just can't do it justice if you haven't seen anything.
So,
El Hijo de Santo is the son of the saint, and that's often, it is often legitimate. Alberto Del Rio was Dos Caras Jr., isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Dos Caras, legendary wrestler. But what I like here is Valiente is the uncle of wrestlers Valiente Jr. and Hijo de Valiente, who asked Valiente's permission to use the name once he made his breakthrough in CMLL, which I think is great. Because, if I'm correct, Rey Mysterio Jr. is, he's the nephew of Rey Mysterio, isn't he? Not the son. And I think that family lineage is really, really cool. And just always something that I'm always fascinated by.
It applies everywhere. Like, I might be wrong, but Rey Horus used to be El Hijo del Rey Mysterio. Because
I'm looking him up.
I think I'm right here, but again, I could be chatting absolute bollocks.
He was El Hijo del Rey Mysterio too. There you go, this time it's personal.
He's also part of that lineage in some way, or trained with the original Rey, and that's where
the son of the King of Mystery.
Yeah,
which is brilliant. His real name is not a matter of public record.
I wish that was the case for me. That'd be incredible.
What's amazing here is I know his real name because I met him, and like I love that tradition. I wish it, you know, I know some people know your real name.
Yeah, it's right? Going to happen.
And like, obviously I know your real name. I would have loved it, like when you arrived here, my son was still up.
Yeah.
I would have loved it if you'd arrived in the mask, you'd driven here in the mask, you arrived in the mask. My wife had never met you before, would only ever see you in the mask.
I just kept that saving for the whole time.
But it's not realistic in British professional wrestling. It's not realistic in American professional wrestling. In Mexico, it's still kind of realistic.
Yeah,
I like it when you see like a wrestler in a mask in a suit.
Mm.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Got to do it at an attack, and it was incredible. I loved it.
Need to find a way for you to do this at some point.
Oh, right.
Also, can you spray mist?
Oh, Pete Dunne, guide to everyone who's become a star ever in the UK, seemingly. He's been telling me to do the mist since Progress Birmingham, where we wrestled.
Do the mist.
Yeah.
So, regular listeners, again, will be aware, I had to write a list of my favourite moves for my book. And spoilers for my book, one of them is the mist.
Yeah.
I had two burning ambitions in wrestling outside of just wanting to be a wrestling promoter. One was I wanted to be with a chair. That's happened. It really hurt. I never want to do it again. But it worked well at the time. The other one is I want at some point in my life to be a heel somewhere. Well, probably never happen in Progress, let's be honest. But be a heel somewhere where I can spray, it has to be black mist in particular, I can spray black mist in someone's face. See, Pete would never be able to do it because you know when Pete, Trent and Tyler used to do the water spitting thing when they were heels for us? Pete's got a gum shield in his
worst one.
He used to crack me up every time.
I want to do it, but the problem is my mask is in front of my face, like, and especially my new ones. They're made by a guy in Mexico, and they're really well made. So to bend that thing up would take way more effort to get the mist out. It wouldn't be very clean.
Oh, I need to find some way of doing it.
It's a lost art, man. Like, if you
I like the Bushi doesn't.
It's good, but like Muta's, like if you watch the classic stuff when he's got Gary Hart and stuff, it's just so clever how they do it.
It's brilliant. Muta, Tajiri, Bushi. I'm surprised more people don't do it because it's such a cool gimmick.
Yeah.
And you know, one day
someone should.
One day it's happening.
But yeah. Valiente, seek him out. He's incredible.
Yes. Who's next after Valiente?
I've only got two more because about 10 people. But yeah. We're gonna go with Yoshitsune.
How are we spelling this?
Yoshi.
Yes.
T S U. Yeah.
There we go.
And then add wrestler because otherwise. Going to come up with a warrior.
That's why I know that word. Also, I would have gone Yoshitsune because I'm an idiot. Yoshitsune, there we go.
Yoshitsune has had many names. You will be familiar here with him, surprisingly, because he was in PWG for a long time as I forget what his name was. He had a crazy like knight's outfit. If I see the list, I'll be able to tell
you. There we go. PWG as El Blazer.
El Blazer, there we go. So, he's very famous for the rope walk techniques you see maybe Phoenix do a lot of nowadays. He was doing coast to coast by running the ropes and then just doing a little falling dropkick at the end.
Yeah.
Like, he was crazy unique. And my first exposure to him was a Mexico show, which is rare because he was Suki San in AAA.
He's got so many finishes.
Oh yeah,
he's got so many aliases.
But like to give you some like a roundup of him, he was Minishima at one point in Dragon Gate. He was when Dragon Gate separated and became from Toriumon, he left and formed Dragon Door. Helped not formed. He was part of Dragon Door and wrestled as Little Dragon, which was to rip off Dragon Kid. Right, they were angry at Dragon Gate for whatever reason.
Yeah. He's only 5'4" as well, so the little thing is
it's accurate. Yes. But then he's done other things. He's done 01, he's done AAA, he's done Michinoku Pro. But Yoshitsune is quite a crazy character. He was doing Top Row 619s in 2001. He was doing all these like crazy innovative moves, like Flip Gordon as a springboard superkick.
His moves are nuts.
Yoshitsune was doing springboard, run the ropes on the top rope, and superkick the person. And like he was doing these crazy unique moves, and like you can find MVs of him on YouTube. He's one of the most unique wrestlers. You can also find some funny moments, like as Sugi-san, potentially inebriated, allegedly is the story, in a AAA match, he escapes a cage and then decides to make his escape even more cool. He'll moonsault off the ring post and he breaks his legs.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm not familiar with him is I'd seen his name written down again and I'd probably seen bits and bobs of him.
Mm.
But it's so many aliases.
Yeah.
Like everywhere he goes, different name. So different name in Toriumon, multiple different name companies. In Hustle, different name different in Michinoku Pro, different name. It's brilliant. But on his, so if you put him into, I'll put Yoshitsune or Takuya Sugi, which is his real name, mm-hmm. Into Wikipedia. And then he's got all his finishes for all his various aliases, all of which are badass.
Yeah.
Then he's got his signature moves, some of which are just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Just reading them going, what? I don't, what?
He's dope, man. Like,
he was managed by Hayabusa as well.
Yep.
Like,
he's been around for the longest time, man. He's
brilliant.
Yeah, he's an incredible person to search out and has an influence on a lot of high flyers nowadays and is a very talked about wrestler on car journeys, especially with my group of people we travel with. Like, just such a crazy character to watch wrestle.
Some of his names are great as well.
Mm-hmm.
Michinoku Ranger Gold.
Yep.
Great.
Hustle Carmen Man or something, maybe.
Hustle Carmen Ranger Red.
There we go.
Rabbit Boy, El Fuerte, which is the most generic luchador name.
All his names, like that's the worst one.
It's so easy.
He actually might be the in Dragon Gate is a famous clip, which went viral worldwide, not just as a Dragon Gate clip, but just as Japanese wrestling, where a Power Ranger moonsaults onto the cameraman.
Yes,
I think that's him as well.
Amazing. He's wrestled everywhere as well.
Yeah, he's been literally everywhere.
And doesn't seem to stay in one place for particularly long.
No, something goes on. But yeah, like,
clearly, there's some issue with him.
If you've got the High Spots Network, you can find PWG shows where he's on and he's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look that up.
I'm going to look that up. I don't think, because he was in PWG in 2008.
Yeah.
So, it's a fair while ago. I'm certain I would have seen some stuff in his Hellblazer. I just will have.
Yeah.
It's 10 years ago now. I'm an old man. Who's your final selection?
Final person, near and dear to my heart in some sense, and where I stole the original Lycos look and the name we added on from, is a character called Mondai Ryu from Dragon Gate, meaning problem dragon.
Yeah, that's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
Problem dragon, I like it very much.
Yeah. Mondai Ryu started as a character called Ape Kimata, Kimata being his real last name.
And Ape being spelled in capitals because Japan.
obviously, whatever it is, it didn't go down well. He became the first incarnation. No, not the first. He was the second, maybe, incarnation of Super Shenlong, which is
he was the second.
A Chinese character that Dragon Gate was always trying to force into being a character because they always wanted a Chinese dragon. the first Super Shenlong was he wrestled in Big Japan, has a really famous match with Daisuke. I'm blanking his name and Chris is going to hate me for it. But the point being, there's been many a good wrestler, but for whatever reason, Shenlong didn't click. and they had him turn. He became a heel and became Mondai Ryu. He was the longest tenured heel in Dragon Gate for a while, until the reason he turned babyface is he was a bad guy in the stable Berserk in 2016, and Shima's stable over Generation beat Berserk in a match where they would get to pick one of the other members, member of their faction, and take them.
I remember reading about that.
And they took Mondai Ryu because Shima said they saw promise in him. Now, the reason for this was Mondai Ryu needed surgery on his neck, so they were going to have, he was going to be out for a while, so there was a perfect way to turn him babyface.
Hmm.
He's back now, a good guy, and it was a really unique presence on Dragon Gate show. A very low card wrestler, but always important, especially in the shenanigans. Like, Dragon Gate's known for a lot of run-ins and stuff, and weapon attacks, and he's just very.
He was once in a mask versus passport match.
Yep.
That's yep. So good.
He was in a. They have a 6-man cage match every year called Dead or Alive, where mm-hmm. the loser loses their hair or their mask. He lost, and he wears a mask, and he was like, "Nah, sod it, I ain't losing my mask. I'm losing my hair." So he takes his mask off, they shave his head, and he puts his mask back on. He's like, "Ugh."
That's so cool.
He's the best, and he's the king of music, in the sense that his entrance theme was Shima, Gamma, Don Fuji, Mochizuki, and one of the other veterans just booing for 2 minutes.
Yeah, because his entrance music by Team Veteran is called Salty Abubu.
Yep, and he was just booed.
Booed by Salty Veterans?
Yeah, for 2 minutes. And he'd just enter the ring with his bucket of salt and his big cane, and he'd have weird matches, and he was great. But also,
one of his signature moves is a salt attack, yep. Which makes him sound like...
He's
so good.
He's one of the... It's seemingly really funny as well, because if you watch him wrestle, he seems kind of immobile in some senses. Like, he runs kind of weird and hits various, like, he runs a knee strike in the corner, and he does like the SOS that Kofi Kingston does.
Yeah.
But then he also does a shooting star press, and it's beautiful. Like, it's crazy the motion this dude has.
Oh, so cool.
But yeah, that's one near and dear to my heart, and
to understand
partially that. Responsible for the Lycos transformation. So.
One last question I want to ask you is mm-hmm. the one time I've had to, I mean, I had to introduce you once as a singles competitor.
Yes.
And I had to, and I remember this every time I go to Starbucks, I had to introduce you as being from, what's the tea?
The mango black tea.
Yeah. Garden. And my daughter's addicted to that drink. And I'm like, every time I buy it, I'm like, this is weird. I want to start to, because it's always stuck with me. Why?
So... Ultramantis Black in Chikara used to be from the Black Tea Gardens or something of that nature.
Nice.
And Chris Brooks and I, at the time, were both drinking, more so Chris, I would say, because I'm not as into tea as he is. We're drinking the mango black tea cold drink from Starbucks.
Yeah, which is lovely, by the way. We're not sponsored by Starbucks, but hey, Starbucks, send us vouchers.
I would love it, please.
We both travel a lot, please.
But so for a laugh, we got announcers from that for Attack originally, because originally we were from Octopus Island, but it's just so cliche. We're like, oh, I'll just do this. It's a tribute to Ultramanus Black. Chris and him are friends and get on quite well, so
I love Ultramanus
it was a nice thing to like do that. And but then that show came around, and I was like, oh, but it's progress, it's more serious. I can't, but I'm a weird mass character. I can't be from Tipton like Chris.
No, you can't. And also, I mean, any wrestlers listening to this, when I come up to you and go, where am I announcing you from? You can literally say anything. I'm not going to say, I clearly did not say no to Lycos.
Mm.
Like, I will go, yeah, all right. Because all I'm doing is yelling words.
Irregardless of Jim announcing me, Briley could have edited it and put the normal location, but he didn't.
Oh, we put
so
it like,
out, this is at the time I was just overthinking. So learn from my mistake. Just go with it.
Yeah, just do it. I'm happy. Where can people find you on social media? And also, I know that as a rule to buy your merch, you tend to do merch in person rather than doing lots of stuff online. But plug all the things you need to plug. Also, just from a personal point of view, if you see Lycos or Brooks at any shows and they have their merch, buy their merch. Not only is it, I wear a lot of it, and I've said this to Lycos and to Chris, I'm superstitious, especially when I was doing stand-up. Mm. And it got to a point where I was wearing CCK t-shirts a lot, and I kept having good gigs, so I started wearing them all the time. So, you know, they've brought me good luck
as well as being tremendous, tremendous garments. So I cannot stress how good their merch game is. Because you have a new shirt out this week, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Aye.
And so plug all your things. Okay. Go.
My Twitter is at kidlykos. Tweet me and bury me about this podcast. I know you want to. My Instagram's at kidlykosproblem. Please follow me on there. I have substantially less followers than Chris, and it makes me sad. We usually release merch if we do online sales, which is very rarely, through obeybrooks.bigcartel.com. But occasionally I'll have a shirt on kidlykos.bigcartel.com. Find us at shows. We'll have merchandise. We always have stickers. We've got new pin badges, which are rad. And we've got some cool shirts coming up, especially the one that was released just now.
It is ace. I'll do my plugs quick. At Jim Smallman on Twitter. Tweet us both, actually, me and Lykos, about any obscure masked wrestlers you think we've... I'm going to tell you right now, Lykos will know who everyone is who you suggest. You are not. You might catch me out. You ain't going to catch him out. But any cool gifts, anything like that, just send them to us. We like that.
I need to steal moves. I've got nothing.
Moves that are easier on him as well.
Yeah, please.
Hashtag Tuesday Night Joy if you're tweeting me in particular about wrestling. JimSmallman.com/book to buy my book. That's easy. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets and merch for Progress shows. Demand-Progress.com for all of our shows, including many a match featuring the wonderful CCK and obviously Kid Lykos. Probably back next week. I say that every week and then end up disappearing for 3 weeks. Thanks for your patience. Cheers, Lykos.
No worries.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.